From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 7th, 2017. And on this day, reaction from Maine's U.S. senators and U.S. reps on President Donald Trump's Syrian missile strike, and Maine's airport's attempt to regulate pickups by Uber and Lyft. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the law offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
All four members of Maine's congressional delegation say President Trump's airstrikes against Syria were a proportional response to a chemical weapons attack that killed dozens of civilians. But they say before Trump takes any further action, he must consult Congress. Patty White has more.
Democratic Representative Shelley Pingree says technically, President Trump should have asked Congress for authorization to carry out Thursday's airstrikes.
Whether the president took the right approach or not, I'm not a military expert, but I do know that this is the kind of situation where the president needs to have an authorization of Congress. That's his constitutional obligation, and we should be in the dialogue and conversation.
All four members of Maine's delegation say Trump should consult Congress before taking any further action. In written statements, independent Senator Angus King and Republican Representative Bruce Poliquin each say a comprehensive strategy is needed to address the larger, ongoing problems in Syria and the surrounding region. Republican Senator Susan Collins also released a written statement saying the airstrikes delivered an important message to both Syria and Russia. Russia brokered a diplomatic agreement in 2013 that required the destruction of all of Syria's chemical weapons, and Collins says that agreement must still be adhered to. But Representative Pingree says the U.S. needs to proceed carefully.
Well, I just don't want us to get back into the situation that we were in Iraq or Afghanistan, which really turned our nation against that kind of conflict, spent trillions of dollars, and many people believe didn't make the situation better.
Pingree is also concerned about the president's efforts to block Syrian refugees into the country.
I just think it's horrific to have compassion on the one hand, seeing these babies die, but then being unwilling to let their families into our country when we could be very helpful at this moment in time.
According to Pingree, the U.S. can't resolve the crisis in Syria with force alone. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
There is no dispute that contaminants like lead and arsenic, often found in private water supplies, can cause serious health problems. But Maine lawmakers are struggling with how best to address the problem of unsafe drinking water in private wells, which are not tested as frequently or as comprehensively as public water supplies. Matt Leary has our story.
Many Mainers get their water from their own wells, and studies have shown many of these private wells have unsafe levels of lead and arsenic and other contaminants. In some parts of the state, as many as half of them have high levels well above recommended levels. Representative Karen Vachon, a Republican from Scarborough, has introduced legislation to set testing standards for private wells. She says she did so after seeing the results of tests in her community that found more than 38% had unsafe levels of arsenic.
I was shocked when I first learned about how many homes in my town had arsenic-contaminated water.
Arsenic in drinking water can harm brain development in young children and cause various health problems, including skin and lung cancers. The National Cancer Institute believes the high level of arsenic in Maine well water is a factor in Maine's bladder cancer rate being 20% higher than the national level. Lawmakers on the Health and Human Services Committee heard from several Mainers who have had high levels of contaminants in their home wells. Wendy Brennan of Mount Vernon says it was only by chance that she had her well tested. Her daughter wanted the T-shirt being given away by the academic group conducting a study of well water in Maine.
I was shocked to learn the level of arsenic in my water was 57 parts per billion. The EPA is 10 parts per billion. For 8 years, my family had been using arsenic-laden water for cooking, bathing, and drinking.
Brennan said her family has installed a filtration system that removes most of the contaminants, but she says members of her family have already been adversely affected. She urged lawmakers expand education and remediation efforts. Gail Carson, who teaches environmental policy at Colby College, says remediation can get expensive.
There isn't a lot of information that's given about the options for remediation. There are several. You know, you can do a tap filter or a under-the-sink filter or a whole house filter, of course, would be the gold standard, but those cost thousands of dollars.
The proposed legislation requires the Department of Health and Human Services to do a couple of things: develop test standards and create outreach programs to educate homeowners about the potential health problems caused by contaminants in their wells. It focuses on the Health and Environmental Testing Laboratory within the department to accomplish many of the goals, even though the lab does not do all of the water testing in the state. Private labs also do water quality tests. As currently written, the bill calls for testing for arsenic, uranium, manganese, fluoride, and radon. Zachary Smith of Northeast Laboratory Services says the testing should be broader.
A water test under LD 454, as currently written, would ensure private homeowners their water is safe for human consumption when, in fact, it may be hazardously contaminated with lead, E. coli, copper, and many other materials.
Smith said private labs should also be included in the strategy to educate and remediate for health-related issues associated with arsenic and lead. The committee is also considering several other related bills dealing with exposure to contaminants, including how to prevent it in the first place. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine's two major airports want to regulate and charge ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft that pick up passengers at the terminals. Airport officials are backing legislation that would allow those changes, which they say are needed to prevent chaos outside the baggage claim. Steve Missler has our story.
Portland Jetport Director Paul Bradbury says ride-sharing services like Uber are a technological revelation. But the geolocation system that powers the service, plus the competition among Uber drivers for air traveler fares, sometimes creates mayhem at the Portland terminal. That's because the closer a driver gets to the person who hailed a ride online, the better the chances of getting the fare.
So if they can be right on you, tag you when you come out of baggage claim, they're doing very well.
Bradbury told members of the legislature's Transportation Committee Friday, some Uber drivers will try to park in the immediate pickup or drop-off lot, or sometimes chat up a security guard so they can leave their car idling just outside baggage claim. Bradbury says those tactics, while arguably enterprising, are causing problems at an airport that moves nearly 2 million passengers a year.
And we have to have rules to keep from having chaos in that we have a lot of people on a very small piece of property.
And right now, there's nothing Bradbury can do about it. That's because state law prohibits municipalities from creating any additional regulations governing so-called transportation network companies, like Uber. That provision was included in a bill passed 2 years ago that made Maine one of 42 states that regulates these companies. Now airport officials in Bangor and Portland are asking the legislature to amend the law so they can create ordinances specific to airports. They would like to limit how many Uber drivers can pick up airport passengers at any given time. Instead of a swarm of drivers crashing the terminal at the gate, Bradbury says only 10 or so would be allowed at a designated parking area at any given time. When the limit is reached, the app would stop showing pickup requests, but would turn back on after a driver leaves the airport. A similar system is in place for Portland's 300 or so taxi drivers, some of whom pay up to $800 a year just to be allowed to pick up airport passengers. Bradbury says he doesn't envision an annual fee, but perhaps a $2 trip fee for each pickup. In Uber's response to this proposal,
we had not been aware of any complaints from airports or municipalities that would necessitate the dismantling or tinkering with the statewide policy.
Jeremy Payne, the lobbyist hired by Uber, opposed the bill. He said the exemption created 2 years ago was designed to avoid a patchwork of rules and regulations among the cities and towns served by ride-sharing services. Payne also warned lawmakers that unnecessary regulations would send a negative message to Uber, which has expanded its service since first coming to Maine 3 years ago. Payne's arguments are similar to those used by the company in other states, but the pressure has increased to regulate the service at airports, and many states have. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Finally today, the University of Maine School of Law is partnering with several other organizations to launch a project it hopes will bring more lawyers into rural parts of Maine. According to a 2014 report, almost two-thirds of Maine lawyers in private practice outside Cumberland County are 50 or older, which means they may be retiring in the coming years, leaving a dearth of legal services in those areas. The three-year program plans to place law students with practitioners in rural communities. UMaine Law School Dean Danielle Conway says during the admissions process, the program will identify prospective law students who are interested in rural practice and in going back to their hometowns to practice.
And after their first year of legal study, we select them as fellows to return back to rural communities to do an immersive fellowship with rural lawyers, lawyers practicing in rural areas, and become ensconced in the environment that rural lawyers actually practice in.
Conway says the high cost of higher education and debt from both undergraduate and law school can be a major barrier to young lawyers practicing in rural areas. She says she'd like to see some loan repayment assistance associated with the pilot program for lawyers who commit to rural practice, and the school plans to seek funds to make that happen. The pilot will start by placing two student fellows who Conway says she hopes will return for all three summers. The project will have 10 slots available over the 3 years. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, April 7th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a great weekend.